Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back. This is episode 277 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I'm Sean Penrod, your host. So excited to be with you today. And this show is brought to you by you, the patrons. Thank you so much for your direct support. It's really because of you that we're able to keep things going. If you're interested in learning more about that program, go to mtgprotutor.com/Patreon, where you can check out the sweet prizes that we have lined up for each tier. Also, Paragon City Games is a proud supporter of the show. They provide the prize support for the patron exclusive giveaway and for the Prodigy Sealed League that we do every set. We are currently in the top 8 of the Rivals of Ixalan Prodigy Sealed League. It's been a blast playing my matches, and I really look forward to those who are in the top 8. Good luck to each of you. There are prizes for everybody in the top 8, ranging from a bundle of Rivals of Ixalan all the way down to a portion of the entry fee covered for the next league. So that's pretty cool. Thank you so much for everyone who played, and I look forward to even more people joining us on the next one. We tested out some systems that worked really well, namely having the rounds published on Challenge and letting each player report their own score. That way it was less work for the admins to do, and we were just able to kind of go in and double check things and make sure it's humming along. So it's been a blast. Absolutely loved doing this sealed league, and we will definitely be announcing the winner here probably next week, because it should be wrapping up here shortly. Now, last weekend we had Grand Prix Phoenix. That's pretty cool. And this weekend we have Grand Prix Kyoto. So for those who follow competitive Magic and keep their finger on the pulse, which is probably mostly Prodigies, otherwise you might not be listening to the show, those are always fun to watch to kind of see what shakes out, what decks are rising to the top, what people are doing. And I kind of went ape nuts this last week and just invited a ton of people onto the show and got a fairly good response rate. So I've been doing interviews all this week. I have several more next week. And we have episodes to publish each and every Friday for the next couple months for you coming up. So stay tuned. We have some great guests who have had amazing accomplishments in Magic, and they're all lined up, ready to tell you their story and how Magic has helped them develop as a person and how sportsmanship, dedication, and respect have impacted their lives. So I'm really excited for the direction that these conversations are going and the tips and tricks that our guests are sharing. If you are interested in asking questions of the guests, sign up for the MTG Pro Tutor newsletter. Each and every Thursday, I send a letter out, and I list the upcoming interviews that I have scheduled. And you have the opportunity to reply to the email and say, oh, I want to ask this person this question. And I'm going to start carving out time in the interview to ask questions from you. So join the newsletter, check it out every Thursday. And if I have any interviews coming up that week, I'll list them there, and then you can reply and ask questions. So that's something fun and new I want to try out. I really want to guide the conversations to more of the things that you want answered to really help you with where you're at in taking your game, in improving your Magic skills, and becoming a better player and a better person. Anyways, I'm pumped. We have a return guest today, and I always love reconnecting with past guests of the show. This guest has been a while. The first time he was on the show was pre-episode 50, so it has been a while, because this is episode 277, so that's pretty cool that he's still doing great things in Magic and that we can get him back on the show. So without any more preamble, let's dive right into today's amazing interview. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest is the 2016 World Champion, has one Pro Tour Top 16 and 11 Grand Prix Top 8s with 2 Grand Prix wins. He also writes articles for TCGPlayer.com. Coming to us from Roanoke, Virginia, Prodigies near and far, let's welcome back the one, the only, Brian Bronduin. Brian, how are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. How are you?
Fantastic as well. Thank you so much for coming on. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take the game to the next level?
Oh, I love delving. So yeah, I'm ready to jump right in.
Excellent. Now, Prodigies out there, if you heard, I just said welcome back, Brian Bronduin. He was actually episode 44, way back, you know, sub 50s when the show was a wee little babe. And now this is going to be episode 277, so it's been a while. And if you want to hear Brian's intro to Magic, how he came into the game, his first set, his favorite card, things like that, go listen to episode 44. We're going to be diving into what he's been up to since then and you know, his recent successes and stuff like that here in episode 277. If you want to connect with him, he's on Twitter at Bronduinit, which I think is a pretty cool name. And that's where you can find him. Say thanks for being on the show. Reach out to him about Magic related stuff. So Brian, let's see, you're out there in Roanoke. And I mean, is Magic all you're doing still? Like you're doing full-time writing and playing, and that's what you got going on?
Yep, that's it. I'm writing an article a week for TCG Player, and then I'm playing tournaments most weekends throughout the year, and that's my job right now, so that's been pretty nice.
Excellent. How are you liking that?
Oh, I love it. Like, I mean, like anything else, you know, it has its ups and downs, mm-hmm. but really I have no room to ever complain about it, because it's basically, you know, the dream job for me to be able to do something that I love and that I'm super passionate about. And even though I play countless hours of Magic, I still really enjoy the game and I love coming back to playing more. So couldn't be happier doing this.
Now, why do you think that is for you? Because, you know, we've heard both sides. Some people are like, oh, like, you know, if you turn your passion and your hobby, if you turn your passion into a job, then it kind of like weighs down on you because it's a job and you have to do it. But you sound like really excited and still into, you know, the writing and the playing. And you just said that you look forward to it. Why do you think that is for you?
You know, it's hard to explain. I don't know. I think it might just be something about my personality that is that way. But I just love I think it's the puzzle of Magic that I love the most. Being able to problem solve, I think, is probably the best way to put it. It always feels like there's something to be solved when it comes to Magic, whether it's figuring out how to win a certain matchup or figuring out which deck to play for a tournament or things like that. There's always kind of like a puzzle there, and I really just enjoy the challenge of trying to solve that puzzle.
Excellent. Now, pardon my few clicks here as I look it up. We said episode 44, but I'm gonna get specific here on the exact date. Let's see here. You were last on. This is really good pod, everybody. I'm sure you're loving it as much as me. September 17th of 2015. All right, so September 17th of 2015 is when your episode went up last time, and that was, you know, holy moly, 2 years ago. And that was previous to your 2016 season. So yeah, so when we talked to you last, you were right there. At the beginning of probably unknown to you, a really amazing, you know, season coming up to be the world champion 2016. Tell us, what was 2016 like for you? Like, did you do anything different than you had before? Was it just the consistency finally paying off? Like, talk to us a little bit about 2016.
Yeah. So 2016, I played in basically as many events as I could almost. And, cause I was trying to hit that Grand Prix champion slot, which would qualify me for Worlds, which is how I eventually got there.
Real quick, honestly, how does that work?
So, well, they no longer have the slot. They got rid of it after that year, but it was basically whoever earned the most points from Grand Prix over the course of a year, based on your finishes, would qualify for Worlds through that slot.
Perfect. I think I do remember that actually when you made that. Yeah.
And so I basically just played as many events as I could, and I kind of made it a goal. This was kind of the first year where I decided that I was going to just play what I thought the best deck was in every tournament rather than play more of the decks that I like. Sometimes I would have a deck that was kind of a pet deck that I would enjoy playing. And sometimes I would even kind of have a bias towards thinking that the deck was better than it was just because I liked it so much. So this was the year where I kind of just stopped trying to do that as much and just wanted to play the deck that gave me the best chance to win the tournament. I learned a lot of things through that. Like, I learned that I was actually better at playing certain archetypes than I thought I was, even better than some, and that I was worse at playing archetypes that I thought I was good at than I actually was. So it was kind of interesting, and I really learned a lot through that process. And I also made it a point to one of the major things that I did was, and I wrote an article about this last year. If people want to go back and read it. It was called Being Right Versus Being Correct, where my philosophy changed to where I only cared about doing the thing that was correct. You know, making the play that was correct, picking the deck choice that would give me the best chance to win, things like that, rather than care about it being my own personal idea that spawned it or you know, whether I would get recognition from what I was doing or things like that. I stopped caring about those things. So if somebody else had a good idea, I would follow their idea, even if even though I would prefer to use my own ideas, like I would recognize when theirs was a better idea. And there was a couple tournaments where that was the case. For example, at Grand Prix Costa Rica, I was going to play a deck that I thought was very good. And I showed up to the event with Brad Nelson, and he convinced me that his deck was a little bit better. And so I switched to his deck, and then I ended up making top eight of that GP with his deck. So just an example basically of where I decided that, you know what, like I put all this work into this deck and I had all these ideas behind it. But I was willing to listen to somebody else who had even better ideas, and it really benefited me a lot.
I love that. And is this process of playing the best deck and discovering what you're good at and not good at something that everybody can go through?
Yeah, I think so. I think that it's really important as a player. So there's two different competing thoughts, and I think both are right in some regards, which is maybe weird to say. But one of them is that you should play a variety of decks to improve your range as a player, to be able to get better at playing different styles that maybe you're not used to. Mm-hmm. And then the other philosophy is that you should master one style of playing and just be the best at that possible style. And I think there's value in both of those things, actually, which may seem contradictory, but I think that in some cases it's important to broaden your range, because sometimes the decks that you like playing just don't really exist in a certain format, or the tools aren't there.
Right.
So it's important to be able to then move to something else. But it's also nice to have a mastery of an archetype. So when you have like a choice, like there's two decks that are both pretty good, maybe yours is even slightly worse than the best deck, but it's something that you know perfectly and you've mastered, mm-hmm. you can play that deck and do really well with it.
Excellent. So to unpack this a little bit more, how do you determine what, let's say you're going to go through and, oh, I'm just going to play the best deck so I can get a feel for the different archetypes, stuff like that. How would you determine what the best deck is to play at that given time?
Yeah, that's a process that's kind of tough to pinpoint exactly. Usually I go off of two things. One of them is results. I look at how well decks are doing from other tournaments, and I also look at how well they're doing on Magic Online. And then I also look at how well I'm personally doing piloting these decks myself. So I know that there's a lot of talk about like not using results-oriented thinking, which is a valuable lesson. But at the same time, results are really the only data point we have.
Good point.
For things. So you do have to use results in some regard. So I do use results a lot when determining what I should play. And then the other thing is just feel, which it's really hard to pinpoint exactly how you know when it comes to feel, but it's just like this deck feels really good. Whereas some decks, they have little inconsistencies about them that I think detract a little bit from them. Like maybe there's some sort of two cards that don't really play that well together in the deck, and you draw those two cards enough combinations of times over the course of an event where it's going to lower your win percentage or something. And usually the best decks and formats, they have a lot of powerful cards and all the cards work together really well, and there's not a lot of dis-synergy between the different pieces. So that's kind of what I look for too, is just a very coherent deck mm-hmm. where cards are powerful and all the cards work together to make themselves even more powerful.
Now, here's a thought. Do you have to play the best deck at the time to get a feel for that archetype and if it's right for you? Or can you just say, hey, I'm going to play aggro for the next X months or whatever, regardless of whether it's good or not? Can a Magic player still get what they need out of that testing period? Or if it's like, say it's a bad deck, it's just going to get smashed every single matchup or whatever, will that give bad feedback to the player if they're just trying to find what works for them?
Yeah, I think it will. I think it can create some false positives that way. There's a lot of information in Magic, and it's very difficult to parse that information. And I think what separates some of the best players is their ability to objectively understand what's causing something to happen. Mm-hmm. So if like, let's say, you know, in your example, a player is trying to become a better aggro player. So they're like, I'm going to play aggro decks for a few months to broaden my range as a player. And they do really poorly with them. That player might draw the conclusion, I'm really bad at playing aggro decks and I shouldn't do this anymore.
Right. Okay.
But that might not necessarily be the right conclusion. It might just be that aggro decks are really bad right now. Not necessarily that player is bad at aggro decks. Maybe, you know, in a year or two, they could try again and do really well. So I think mm-hmm. it's a lot of it's like being able to, you kind of want to broaden your range as a player and try to get better at playing a certain archetype in a period, I think, where that archetype is a good choice, because that'll give you maybe better indicator of how you're doing. And it also can be a confidence boost too sometimes. If a deck's like really, really powerful and you make that deck your first foray into that style of playing, sometimes you can just outpower your opponent even if you're not playing it perfectly, and that can give you a confidence boost to want to keep playing more with it and improve with it.
Love it. It's like whenever you're comparing something, I've heard this for, you know, different categories, whatnot, you want to compare, you know, best to best, you know, the best in A with the best in B. Otherwise it's not really a comparison, right? If you're looking at your aggro experience when aggro was at its worst versus your control experience when control was at its best, then like you said, you might be like, oh well, I'm just a really good control player, and in fact maybe, you know, aggro is your thing, it's just it was the wrong time. So I really like that. As you're going through and testing and playing, what are you looking for? You talked about a little bit about it and kind of talked about the feel, which I want to get to next. But are there anything else that you're looking for as to how it indicators of whether it's good for you that other players can kind of keep in mind as they're trying to find their archetype?
Yeah. Another thing too is actually, my enjoyment level while playing a deck. I know that a lot of times when you're trying to be hyper competitive, and you're trying to, like, if you're trying to be like a top pro and, you want to be as competitive as you can in every event, whether or not you enjoy a deck really shouldn't factor into your decision, but it always does. And I think I'm at the point now where I believe that it's a very relevant consideration. Where I tend to always do better with decks that I enjoy. It's rare that I do well with a deck that I don't like. And so while that shouldn't, in a perfect world, that shouldn't be a consideration for whether or not I want to play a certain archetype or deck, that's just not how, I guess, human nature really works. Mm-hmm. So I personally tend to try to gravitate towards playing decks that I also enjoy. And sometimes I'll take a deck and I'll play like the second best choice in a tournament if it's something that I'll enjoy playing way more, because I'll probably still do better with it than I would with the best choice.
Yeah. And on the topic of feel, you're absolutely right where it's hard to articulate it. And my experience that it was just so pronounced for me was, it was during the Mardu Green season. I was playing something before and just kind of humming along and playing Magic and, you know, having a good time or whatever. But it just wasn't really clicking. And I realized that after I had switched and started playing Mardu Green, and it just clicked. I loved playing the games, and just like the style was right. And just, you know, using the Mirasa's Pulse to bring stuff back was so much fun. And then Goblin Dark Dwellers, just everything about it was just really humming for me. And I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't played it. And when I played it, it just felt fun and it felt right and it was really cool. And then when I contrasted that to how I felt when I was playing the whatever deck it was before, I don't remember what it was. It was like, oh wow, like I could definitely tell for me the difference. And it's that experience that you're kind of looking for and that you're kind of going for when you're trying to find a deck that suits you, I feel. And have you had experiences like that?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like I've had, actually even in this recent standard format, I've had that experience where I was playing a blue-black mid-range deck, and I just really don't like the deck. I know that it's a powerful deck. It's a good deck. In fact, I had an article come out today talking about the best decks in Standard, and that was one of my choices. But it's just a deck that I personally don't enjoy playing, and I've done pretty poorly with it when I've played it. And I ended up switching over to Grixis, which is a really similar deck, actually. But I just all of a sudden it was just like night and day. Like I really loved playing the Grixis deck. I was doing much better with it, and I suddenly like started to enjoy playing Standard more. And so it was just kind of almost like a light switched on for me, like what you were saying with the Mardu Green.
Awesome. That's a lot of fun. So where are you sitting right now this season as far as pro points and events and what you have coming up?
So right now I have 40 pro points, which is pretty good. We're in the third season of the year, so a little over halfway done. And I need to get to 52 to be able to hit platinum.
Okay.
So I'm on good pace to hit platinum this year, which would be really nice. As I've I was platinum the last 2 years, but it was from winning the world championship. And I've never actually earned enough points to have gotten platinum just through total point earning before. Mm-hmm. So this would be, if I could do that this year, that would be awesome. It'd be the first year I've done that. So that's kind of my goal at this point. As for what's coming up, I've got some Grand Prix, and there's two more Pro Tours at the end of the year. There's a standard one in a couple of months, and then there's a team Pro Tour to close the season out. So I'm pretty excited about both of those. And I'm also excited, actually, a lot of the Grand Prix this year are team events, and I kind of enjoy those. So I'm pretty excited about those too.
Very cool. Well, best of luck. Like, it's always fun to see past guests do great things, and just being, what, 12 points off right now, that's it's very doable. So we wish you the best of luck in that endeavor for sure.
Thanks. So yeah, I'll need it.
So three of the things that we are starting to focus on more as prodigies are sportsmanship, dedication, and respect. Dedication to being a better player, to being a better person, you know, being wholly devoted to something. Respect is a deference to the right of somebody else or the privilege of somebody else. And sportsman, there's, you know, qualities that embodies being a good sportsman, like, you know, winning with class, losing with grace, respecting officials, you know, things like that. Now, in your magic, first of all, let me say this. What does sportsmanship mean to you? If you were to define that, how would you define that, Brian?
Oh man, I don't know how to exactly define it, but I would say it means to basically treat your opponent with respect, and to handle yourself with class. Basically, to handle yourself in a way that you would want others to see and emulate themselves. Yeah. So, like, you know, make sure that you're always, you know, you don't want to treat people poorly. You want to make sure that the game is played fairly. That's a big thing too. And that you are always, like, you know, you never want to demean other competitors and things like that. Those are important things to me.
Yeah. And how have you experienced this in your magic, you know, in your magic life, either that you've seen or that you've done? Because now that it's kind of coming back to me, if I remember correctly, like 2016, I think some people are like making a kerfuffle. Oh, like, you know, he's taking a spot that probably somebody else who has more points could take and whatnot. And you handled it very well. And then you wouldn't end up winning to kind of show, hey, look, like it's worth giving people, you know, that GP slot a chance. And granted, that GP slot is gone now, but I remember at the time there was kind of some talk about that. But all throughout it, I remember you handled yourself very well. You exemplified, you know, these traits that we just went over and that you just said and whatnot. So how have you been able to maintain that and, I guess, cultivate that in your life as a Magic player?
I think the biggest thing has just been to – and I don't think this was definitely not always true for me, but I've kind of – as I've gotten older and been around this community longer and longer, I've kind of come to realize that magic isn't really the most important thing. As though it may seem that it is, but people are just way more important than magic. And the relationships that you build and how you treat yourself and treat others really has a huge impact on how others treat you back. And so I think, like, handling yourself with class and being a good sportsman are the kinds of things that will end up being way more important in the long run than even how well you do at Magic, just because those are the kinds of things that other people see and can respect, and that will cause them to want to interact with you, that'll help you build bridges and build relationships that can benefit you along the down the line later.
And how do you develop that? So, like, obviously, the time to develop it is not in the moment, in the middle of the game or right after a hard loss or whatever. What can we do outside of Magic and, you know, in our lives and leading up to events so that when we are in the middle of a situation, you know, we handle ourselves with class and we are perceived as being a good sportsman because we are.
Yeah. I think the best thing to do in regards to that is to basically try to always spend some time thinking about, like, other people's perspectives, and try to kind of put yourself in other people's shoes and think about what they might be thinking and what might be going through their head, and trying to make sure that you're not ruining their experience, like, without knowing that you're doing that kind of a thing. And I think it takes a lot of like watching and listening, I think, are key. Like just seeing what other people say and reading what they say and learning about their experiences, and then giving them the benefit of the doubt and believing that their experiences are valid, and then choosing to respect that when you play against people and do the kinds of things that will help their make their experience better. For example, like, you know, if your opponent beats you, like complaining in front of them for a long period of time is going to lessen their experience.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's something to think about. Like I'm not being very respectful here. I'm not being a good sportsman. I'm kind of ruining their experience because I'm unhappy about what happened. And it doesn't, usually it doesn't really even make you feel better to do that. So it's just usually, you know, you can avoid doing that by just holding it in, maybe complaining with your friends later on, if you need to. I mean, which is perfectly fine, I think, to want to complain about a tough loss, but, there's no reason to, you know, basically make an innocent bystander, your opponent, a victim in that as well.
Yeah. There's this, I learned about it in one of my psychology classes. I don't remember all the technical terms, whatever, but basically there's like different stages of thought or whatever. And when you have like realizations, you kind of break through to this next stage or whatever. But that takes, it takes like conscious, like deliberate action and effort, and you have to think about it. And my point is, a lot of people just kind of drift through life, and they don't take the time to actively think or make decisions or whatever about how they're going to be in situations and stuff like that. And what you just described, it takes a little bit of work, right? It takes some time to say, okay, you know, go to your LGS, kind of sit back and look at people, be like, okay, like that person I just walked in, like you said, think about from their point of view, what is their expectation when they come into here? Like what, you know, what would they like to experience here in the store, and how am my actions, you know, affecting that. And that takes work and takes time, and not everybody does that. They just kind of go through life or whatever. And if you're able to do that, if you're consciously making those decisions, then you get to that point where you're like, okay, my actions, whether it's complaining after a game or, you know, I don't know, using a certain playmat or treating people a certain way or whatever happens to be, my actions are affecting other people. And respect, like we mentioned, is, you know, that deference to other people. And that doesn't mean that you let people walk all over you, because obviously you have rights too, but being mindful that, you know, other people, just people are people, and everyone has different views and whatnot. And taking that time to realize, hey, we can all have a good experience. And, you know, I can, you know, say and do certain things maybe with my group of buddies that I wouldn't say or do in the LGS or whatever. And everyone can have a positive magic experience, but it takes that conscious effort as opposed to just kind of drifting through life and doing what you've always done.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like it takes a little bit of work, like just, it's not even necessarily that much work. It's just being mindful. Yeah. I think a lot of it is just knowing that it exists, even is part of the battle. And just, you know, taking the time to think through, like I'm kind of a, I don't know what the word is. I'm an overthinker, I think, in some regards. I think too much about things. And so sometimes that's detrimental in a lot of ways, but in other ways it can be helpful too. Mm-hmm. I like to kind of plan things ahead sometimes of how maybe an interaction will go or how something will happen, and that'll help prepare yourself for some of the eventualities that could occur.
So two of the qualities, at least that I found, of a sportsman that I really like are losing with class and winning with grace. How would you talk about losing with class? You talked a little bit about, you know, when you lose and your negativity can steal from your opponent's victory, which if you, like you said, turn it around and think about it, hey, how would I like to be treated, right? If I just won, I would not like the other person to, like, you know, drag me down and whatnot. But what are some other ways that we can prepare ourselves for the inevitable losses that come with being a Magic player?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do is to kind of look at it from a distance. I'm not sure the exact way to explain it, but basically I like to think about it. I guess big picture is a good way to explain it. I like to look at the big picture when it comes to losing a match of Magic. So I'm playing a match, maybe it's even a very important match, and I lose, and it's really frustrating, and it's easy to want to lash out in that spot. Especially if something happened in the game, like you got extremely unlucky, or your opponent got extremely lucky, or you know, they made a lot of mistakes, but you couldn't capitalize on them, or whatever it is that generally causes people to be even more frustrated than just losing itself. And like, you want to like lash out in that situation. But what usually grounds me is to just think about it in perspective, which is that like, this is just another event. I play a lot of these events. And like in 6 months from now, am I going to look back and care that I lost this one match? Probably not. Like, maybe a little bit, but it's not going to be like, you know, unless it's like an insanely important match or whatever. It's not like I'm going to think back 6 months ago and be like, I can't believe I lost that match and still be upset about it. It's probably not even going to cross my mind. So in that regard, it's really not something that's actually that important to us. So we shouldn't put that much into it. Like, we shouldn't care that much about it if it's not that important enough to be relevant 2 weeks from now or whatever. Like, you know, you're not going to sit back, you're not going to think back and be like, man, 3 weeks ago I went 2-2 instead of 3-1. And, you know, it ruined me, you know, like that's just not how we ever think about things. So, in that, if you can kind of put it into that perspective, it becomes a lot easier to realize that it's not that important that I lost. And, you know, you can handle the situation a lot better in that regard. And also, if you think about it too, it's not like, you know, your opponent, it's not just that you lost the match, your opponent also won the match. So, you know, they would like to be happy that they won, and you shouldn't deny them that right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. I remember back when I, you know, started the show almost 3 years ago, I had that short perspective, and it's by talking with great players like you that my perspective broadened, and I've come to understand what you just articulated, which is, you know, again, like this event, this is not your only Grand Prix. It's not your only PTQ or whatever. Like, it's not your last chance ever to play Magic. You know, Mark Rosewater has made it very clear that they have a lot of good plans and Magic's still coming out, and there's going to be plenty of opportunities to play the game. So it's not your last chance. And so when you have that long perspective and say, hey, this isn't the end of the world. Yes, you invested, you know, money on the entrance fee and maybe even traveled and, you know, at a GP or whatever. But when you realize, hey, it's not my last GP, there will be another chance, then it helps temper the raging storm of emotions that come when you lose and stuff like that. I totally agree. Now, the flip side is being a graceful winner. What does that mean? And what are your thoughts on that? And how can we be more graceful winners?
Yeah, I think that being a graceful winner most of the time is – well, I think it's much easier than being it's much easier than losing with class because you've just won. So, you know, generally you're pretty happy about that. But I think the biggest thing is to not is to just be respectful of how your opponent feels for having just lost. So, you know, you don't want to rub it in their face that they lost or – you know, I think that you don't want to make a big scene over it a lot of the times too. Although that personally doesn't bother me on the losing side, if my opponent like celebrates their win, sometimes that can be seen as rubbing it in, that kind of stuff. So I think basically the people that I really admire how they handle winning and losing is, Peach Garden Oath, Reed Duke, Huey Jensen and Owen Turtenwald. When they lose a match, they tell their opponent good game and sign the slip and they get up from the table and walk away. That's, you know, no matter how frustrated they are, they're not taking it out on their opponent or anything. And they don't, you know, they don't really sit around and chat or anything either, which is fine. Because I think that when they're frustrated, you know, you don't want to sit there and have to talk it over. You just want to kind of leave. So I like how they do that. And when they win, it's the same thing. You know, they say, you know, thanks for the games. They sign the slip and they get up and leave. And they're just really, they're not like, they don't rub it in your face if they win. And they don't like diminish your accomplishment if they lose, basically. And I think that that's kind of how I would like to emulate. Like, I know I fail in that in some regards, but that's kind of what I would want to emulate myself.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting because like you said, you know, some people Magic players can get nitpicky about everything, right? So some people will say, oh, like, I want to see more emotion and people happy when they win. Other people are like, oh, when they do that, it's like rubbing in the loss and stuff like that. So yeah, you can never make everybody happy, but just do your best, you know, and just be respectful and maybe, you know, leave the table, win or loss, respectfully and quickly as possible. And then either have your poop party or your celebration kind of away from at least your opponent. I don't know. And that's obviously not a hard and fast rule for everyone to follow, but it's just, like you said, just kind of be mindful of the situation and do your best to keep an even keel, win or lose. And it's okay to celebrate. It's okay to be bummed. Just be mindful of how that affects your opponent for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually really like celebration in Magic. Actually, I think there's maybe even too little of it.
Yeah.
Where I think people should be like when you win an important match or something, you should be happy. If you made top eight or whatever, you're really happy about it. There shouldn't be, you know, shouldn't be a problem if you want to celebrate that. I think that's great.
Yeah.
And it's, I, like you said though, it's like, it's really, there's people on both sides of the camp. And it kind of, I think a lot of it comes down to how your perspective is on it. If you're somebody who envisions yourself being frustrated with a loss, you kind of tend to err on, you don't want people to celebrate. If you're the kind of person who kind of envisions how happy it is to win, then maybe you kind of err on the side of that you do like celebration. So it's kind of an interesting discussion in that regard too.
Yeah. So as we mentioned, it's been a while since we had you on. So I don't remember if I asked this question before because the question's kind of developed over time, but let's go into, over your experience playing Magic, what is the biggest mistake that you have observed that you see players make?
Oh man. I want to say that I don't know if this is the biggest mistake. Yeah, there's a lot of answers that are really close here for me. I'm just going to pick one and go with it. I'm going to say that it's basically like tunnel vision, where you come up with a plan of how you're going to play the game out, and then you just blindly follow that plan without reassessing from new information. And I think that that's a huge area that separates some of the best players from more average players. And I think a lot of that is also that, like, I think that skill has become more and more important recently, the nature of the way that certain formats are shifting. Like Standard, for example, has been all about mid-range decks for like the past, ever since Energy came out. It's just all been about these energy decks, which kind of tend towards grindier mid-range style Magic. And winning that kind of Magic is all about having a plan at all points in the game and adjusting your plan at all points of the game to any new information you see. And I think that that's one area in which a lot of players make a mistake, is they come up with a plan and then their opponent draws a card that should change the plan, but they don't think through it to reassess their plan afterwards.
So how can we overcome that? How can we get better at that? How can we be more nimble with our plans in game?
I think the biggest thing is to, I think a lot of people just kind of play Magic. And what I mean by that is that they kind of just play the cards as they come and make the decisions that seem the best to them as the cards come. Whereas I think the way that you will get the best results is if you are always thinking about the end game of like whatever game you're playing. You always want to be thinking about, what is this game going to look like when I win? Like, what is the board going to look like? What is my path to winning the game? And you should be thinking about that every single turn of every game and reassessing when new things come. So I think the biggest key is to always just be thinking about, what does this game look like when I win? And always be making moves that push towards that.
That's really good. Yeah, that's really, really good. Cool. So just reevaluate every single turn, untap, okay, draw, what's my plan? Just kind of, you know, ask yourself that every turn, and between the resources, between what your opponent did last turn, the resources that you just drew, and the current board state, how are you going to get from here to victory? What does that look like? And reevaluate every turn. Very cool.
And I think it's also important to, like, thinking on your opponent's turn is a really big thing too. So a lot of times, a lot of things about having the plan also involve preparing for eventualities, thinking, what if my opponent draws this card? How does that affect the plan? What if my opponent draws this card? How does that affect the plan? What if they draw this? How does that affect the plan? And just going through those different lines as well. That way, when your opponent does draw one of those cards, you've already thought about how that's going to change your game plan. And so you can start to execute your new plan now. So I think that's a big thing too. Like, you don't want to just kind of sit there and twiddle your thumbs while your opponent's taking their turn. You want to be thinking about how that's going to affect your turn and how the various cards they could draw could change your plan.
Sweet. Now, Brian, we want to get the best of our guests. So don't be modest here. What would you say you are known for? What is either your best deck, your best archetype, your best format? Where do you really shine in Magic?
I think I am best known for playing like Abzan aggro, I would say, or Abzan. I'm gonna change my answer to Abzan Reanimator. Back during the Innistrad days, I think I'm best known for that deck and a lot of the various cards that were played in that deck, like Obsidat or Acidic Slime or Unburial Rites. I think that's the deck that people best know me for. And that's kind of the deck that I was playing when I first started to crack into the Pro Tour scene as well.
And so how has the skills you honed there ported over to Magic today?
Actually, in a lot of ways, I don't really play those same kinds of decks anymore. So it's kind of interesting that I've changed a lot. Because I spent a lot of time where I would always play those kind of mid-range green decks. And now I kind of don't really play that as much anymore. But I think it has helped me a lot with kind of like almost what I said before about the planning it out thing. That deck was all about planning ahead and figuring out the best way to kind of stop your opponent or pressure your opponent if they're trying to stop you. And there's a lot, there's so many different things you could do every turn. And I think it really helped me understand like how to figure out which of these five things I should do on this turn. Just so much repetition with decks like that.
So what I'm picking up is your strength is really in thinking. Like you mentioned that you're an overthinker, right? You just mentioned a deck that took, a plan and thinking ahead to navigate well and whatnot. And so honing in on that as being, one of your strong suits, let's talk about that. Like how, because for you it's probably natural, so it might take a little, self-discovery or unpacking or whatever, but what can we do or what can you share? How can we develop our thinking muscle so that we get better at that aspect of Magic?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, actually. I hadn't thought much about that, but that's a really interesting point that you made. I want to say that a lot of it involves preparation, actually.
Okay.
It's not just like when you're in a match and you're thinking about it, you think about all these different things and then you come to decisions. So many of the decisions that I end up making are things that I've thought about before. Mm-hmm. And so I spend a lot of time, this is going to sound really lame, so bear with me here, but I spend a lot of time actually just sometimes even thinking through like fake games in my head of how certain decks will play out. And just kind of going through like almost goldfishing in my head.
Yeah, I was
going
to say that, like goldfishing against a Phantom deck or whatever.
Yeah, like I'll say like, okay, a recent example, one of the decks I've been playing a lot is Lantern Control in Modern, and one of the new decks that's become really popular, definitely not a new deck, but is Jund because of Bloodbraid Elf becoming unbanned. And so I've spent actually a lot of time like kind of almost Phantom Goldfishing games versus Jund sometimes, where I think about like how to sequence to best play around some of their hands that kind of have all the answers, things like that. And a lot of that actually kind of, sometimes plays out in actual matches where if you've done all the thinking beforehand, it's much easier to make the decision in the match. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that comes down to preparation, planning ahead for all these decisions to make, or just playing a lot with the deck ahead of time. So you're comfortable with all the different decisions.
Yeah. I was going to say that if some of the prodigies out there aren't as proficient at keeping all that data in their brain ball and, walking it through mentally like you are, play. Like, play test, practice, like get out your line of control and get out the Jund and just, you know, play either against yourself or with an opponent or somebody, just get those reps in where you can see different lines of play and then you can stop and do like, oh, what if they would have cascaded into this? How would that affect my board? And just like you said, like if you have seen these situations before and they're not necessarily new, then when you're, then when you encounter them or something similar to them in an event, then you've seen it, you've experienced it, you've at least thought about it beforehand and you can make, you know, you still need to make some kind of decision based on the this particular board state of your game, but at least it's not like the first time you've ever seen this interaction.
Exactly. And like, I think a lot of players, a lot of the top players are way, way better than me at in-game play. They're much better at coming up with plans. They're much better at executing them. They get the most value out of their cards, where sometimes maybe I leave a little bit of value on the table. But I think where I can keep up with those players sometimes, a lot of times, is in preparation and just having, you know, prepared. If I've prepared way more than they have, they might be a little bit better than me, but if I've seen it 10 times and this is their second time seeing it, maybe I'll still make a better decision just because I've seen it so many more times, even though they'd be better at it if neither of us had ever seen it before. So I think that's an important thing.
That is cool. That's really cool. So what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Oh, man, I've actually learned almost, I want to say everything.
It's so true. Like, I mean, there's so much that we can pull from Magic's different aspects of it, but go on.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that I want to say that I am like a very, very different person than I was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And in so many different ways, I've completely reversed how I see things and how I think about things and my opinions on different things, whether they are, you know, interpersonal or political or any of that kind of stuff. And I think I owe almost all of it to Magic. So really, it's influenced my life in countless ways and has almost defined my life. And I think that that's a good thing. I think that I feel like I've made so many strides as a person in bettering myself in so many different ways. And I still have a long way to go in so many ways as well, but just bettering myself because of the influence of people that I've seen in the Magic community who served as great role models, where I looked up to them and I thought, like, wow, they're doing something that I really that's something that I want to emulate myself.
Yeah.
Even to just interacting with so many people, like the Magic community just has such a wide diversity of people, and just being able to interact with all of them really opened my eyes. Cause I grew up in like a really small town. I guess it wasn't that small, but it was kind of a rural area. And, I was kind of, I was homeschooled through eighth grade as well. So I kind of was sheltered in a lot of ways from like the realities of the world, and playing Magic and going to events and seeing people of all kinds of different walks of life, all kinds of backgrounds with, all kinds of different experiences, and just like being able to like see how their experiences like shaped them and how their experiences were just radically different than mine. Has given me like a lot of insight and a lot of it's kind of been eye opening for me, and I've gotten to see like so many different things that have really changed how I see things, because I just didn't even realize that, you know, other people's lives weren't like mine until I played Magic. So
nice. I was homeschooled too, by the way, so that's kind of cool.
Oh, cool.
We have that connection. And let's see that here. How has Magic made you or helped you be a better driver?
I can't say that it has.
Oh, actually. Man. I threw you a curveball and I thought, oh, he's going to put something together. He's going to throw it out there.
No, I think it's actually made me a worse driver.
Oh, no. So
I think too much about things instead of focusing on the red.
That's funny. So similar vein, different results. How has Magic made you better in relationships? Whether that's with a significant other or with parents, or you know, pick a relationship. How has Magic helped you become better in your relationships?
That's a really good question, actually. That's pretty cool. I never thought about that, but I do think that Magic has helped me a lot with relationships by basically one way that a lot of Magic players like to look at the world is almost as an EV calculation. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with what I'm talking about. It's expected value. Like, how much value can I get out of this? Like, you go to, it's like, should I draw the last round of FNM to split prizes, or should I play it out?
Right.
And people think about that and they're like, oh, well, I think your value is better if you draw, or your value is better if you play and win, or things like that. And a lot of Magic players kind of see the world through this like value oriented lens. And for a period of time, I was the same way. And then I kind of just almost saw like it get pushed to the extreme with a lot of Magic players. And it kind of just soured me to that notion of kind of seeing the world just through value. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's really detrimental to relationships if you view them as like a value thing, where it's like, how much can I get from this person I'm in a relationship with versus how much do I have to give up? To me, that's not really a real relationship. It's more of just a partnership or something. Like a real relationship to me is something where you're not – it's not about who gives more or who gets more. It's just about two people like coming together and just enjoying life together. And so I think seeing like the value thing pushed to the extreme and just becoming like almost disillusioned with that concept completely has really helped me a lot in relationships, because before, a lot of times I would always, you know, if I gave somebody a gift, I would expect to get a gift in return, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And now I don't feel that way at all. And it's made my relationships way better to not have that mindset. And weirdly enough, I kind of feel like I owe that from Magic just from showing me kind of the downside to thinking that way, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's neat. Thank you for sharing that. And we have heard of EV and talked about it before. And when applied to a relationship, I can definitely see how it can lead to almost, you know, being the toxic one in the relationship, if you're the one that's trying to eke out the value and stuff like that. And where, like you said, a real relationship is really just sharing, you know, life experiences without, you know, trying to get, you know, maximum value out of the other person. So I think that's really cool that you shared that. Thank you. Now, you mentioned one of your articles you wrote recently or last year, being right instead of being correct. Carrying on with that, what would you say has been your best article in, let's say, the last year or so that we can also link to in the show notes?
I want to say that that probably is my best article.
That's the one that you like the most and you're most proud of?
I think so. Cool. I'm gonna do a quick scroll through and see through my article history over the past year and see if there's anything else that I want to throw
in there. Sure.
Yeah, that really just pops out as something that I think would also fit into the mix there.
And these can all be found on tcgplayer.com, because that's where you write.
Exactly. Yeah. Cool. And I'm gonna go with one other piece that I wrote, and it's not about Magic at all, actually.
Ooh,
so
cool.
It's actually a little bit about what we've. It's actually a lot about what we've talked about today, kind of. It's called On Kindness. I wrote this article at the end of last November, and it was about. It was tangentially about a situation where I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but Christine Sprankle, who is a cosplayer in the Magic community, decided to basically quit the Magic community over some YouTube channel stuff. And I don't really want to get into that or anything, but I wrote a piece about basically my own progression through Magic on caring about basically why I started to care about other people in Magic and not just myself. And so it was basically a piece about that and why I found it important to myself to do that. And I was not trying to tell people what they should or shouldn't do, because I don't really like to do that as much, but it was just more like, hopefully my story can help somebody in some way. But I really like that piece a lot.
Cool. So On Kindness and being right instead of being correct. And I totally agree. It's not rarely is it our place to tell someone what they should and should not do. But when you share your own experiences, you say, here's my experience, here's what I think about it. And that I believe is more impactful and honestly less refutable, because you can't say, well, no, you didn't have that experience and you didn't feel that way. Well, obviously, yes, you did. You know, you're the one that lived it. It was your life. And so you're just expressing and sharing this aspect of you and your life and whatnot, and how it relates to whatever topic or issue is at hand, and in the hopes that people think about things a new way and maybe realize something they had before or whatever, rather than saying, well, you should be nice and here's why, just kind of sharing your experience. I think that's a much more powerful way to go about, influencing people and changing, being a force for good, being a positive influence in whatever community, in this case, the natural community. So thank you for sharing that and articulating it. And for the stances that you do take, I do enjoy, reading your pieces. And sometimes when hot button issues pop up, I tend to find myself agreeing a lot with what you say, and especially how you present it. I've always respected your candor in class as you present those kinds of things. So thank you for being a positive force in our community.
Thanks. I do care about it a lot. And a lot of times I don't think I feel like I don't do enough, or sometimes I feel like I sit by and don't say anything when I should say something because for whatever reason, but it is something that I do honestly care a lot about. I'm very passionate about, and it's definitely something that I want to make a positive influence on the magic community. And it's something that I want the community to just to be better in general. So, it's something that I want to invest as much into it as I can, basically.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I have loved reconnecting with you, Brian, today. And I want to remind the Prodigies, if you want to connect to Brian, you can find him on Twitter at Brian Doing It. Also, his articles, as we mentioned, are on tcgplayer.com. We'll link to the ones that we mentioned today from the show notes for sure. And it's been great. We've talked about sportsmanship, winning and losing, and your ups and downs, and some of the highlights that you've had the last 2 years or so. As we close things out, what is a final piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said that you want to emphasize, or something new you'd like to leave with us here at the end?
Just have fun, I guess, is my final piece of guidance. I take magic. Sometimes it's hard for me to, relate sometimes because magic is my job, so I take it extraordinarily seriously. But at the end of the day, it's meant to be a fun hobby. And for a lot of people, that's exactly what it is and what it should be. So, just have fun with it. Don't take it so seriously if it's ruining your enjoyment of it.
Now, Brian, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you again for your time and for sharing your experiences. You are a hero among planeswalkers. It's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you.
Thank you, BBD, so much. Loved having you back on the show, Prodigies. Again, if you missed his first episode, go back and take a look at that. And then you can also listen to this one, kind of see what's been going on in the last couple of years, really, since he's been on the show. It's so great to see players continue to do great in Magic and then come back on the show and share what they've been up to and what Magic means to them and how it's impacted their lives. And this is great. I absolutely loved this conversation. And Brian is such a beacon of sportsmanship, like we talked about. He's great to follow. I always love his take and how respectfully he presents his point of view on magic topics, and he's not afraid to let his opinion be known on any of the hot button issues and things like that. And he does it with such class. So I really look up to Brian, and I'm so grateful that he came onto the show, and I hope that you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. Of course, you can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/BrianBronduin2, the number 2, as this is his second time on the show. And to wrap things up, good luck to anybody going to GP Kyoto this weekend. Make sure you sign up for the MTG Pro Tutor newsletter if you want to ask questions of the upcoming guests that we have. I don't do interviews every week, but the weeks that I do, I will put them in the newsletter and then let you know who is upcoming. And finally, a huge thank you to Paragon City Games for your support of the show, and to the patrons over at mtgpro2.com/Patreon who really make this possible. So thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I look forward to connecting again with you real soon. Until then, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.